From news across the world to events in your community, hear about it all on WKOK Sunrise on News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com.
Thank you so much for joining us here on WKOK Sunrise. Very glad to see you on the radio. Thanks for joining us. Rob Sanders, our fabulous producer. Matt Catrillo's in the newsroom. He says all's clear around here traffic-wise. So far, so good. As you are aware, we are painting the valley pink this month as we work with Evangelical Community Hospital and the Thyram Humphrey Center for Breast Health to raise awareness of breast cancer and to encourage women to get a mammogram. A lot of women still like to put it off if at all possible, and to that end, we make sure that they're doing so with all the information that's available. And that leads us to our annual interview with Dr. John Turner. He is the Medical Director of Cancer Services at Evangelical Community Hospital and clinical co-manager of the Thyram Humphreys Center for Breast Health. I'm so glad to always look up at this time of year and say he's a friend as well. So thanks for coming in, sir.
Thank you for having me.
I do appreciate it. I just think there's so much to learn. We've talked about so much over the years. We've also seen you cooking at Cooking Men with your pulled pork. And some of your pork dishes come from, what do you call it, a tri-tip, a special?
Well, tri-tip. Tip is beef.
Oh, beef. Okay.
I use Boston butts for pork and do a North Carolina style sauce, which is basically vinegar based with hot pepper and a little bit of brown sugar and ketchup, but that's sort of the base sauce.
Well, I tell you that because Cooking Men is sold out, but we want you to vote for Dr. Turner on Cooking Men. Go ahead and look at some of the other celebrity chefs out there, but put a ticker right there where Dr. Turner is. It's part of the fundraising, so go to evenhospital.com/cookingmen and put a check there for Dr. Turner's pulled pork that he's going to be serving up at Cooking Men coming up. We still hear discussion about when women should be screened. You know, you always had the right age bracket, and then they moved it back, or some people moved it back, although you always argued that it was pretty appropriate where it was. Where are we at on this now?
Well, there has been a lot of confusion. Different groups have come up with different starting ages, different patterns of screening, and that has produced confusion and returned us a little bit to 20 to 30 years ago when we did not have consistent screening, and we were seeing many women who haven't been screened for 4 or 5 years when they come to us with a problem, and I think it directly stems from that confusion. The American Society of Breast Surgeons kind of took a look at this past year, and in May published a position statement on breast imaging in general, which recommends risk-based screening, which lines up with what we believe at the Center for Breast Health, that somewhere around the age of 25, between 25 and 30, a risk calculation should be done for a patient in addition to an assessment of their family history in relation to whether there could be a risk of a genetic mutation. And then that patient should be followed appropriately based on that basic risk calculation that's done. So for a woman who is at average risk and does not have a strong family history, we believe they should start at the age of 40 with their first screening mammogram and then have annual mammograms up until the point where their life expectancy is less than 10 years or their functional status would dictate that you would not expect them to live another 10 years.
At what point do you get a genetic analysis mixed into this?
Yes, sir. That is also in flux now. There have been specific criteria published by groups like the National Comprehensive Cancer Network that recommend genetic testing for families with more than two or more breast cancer diagnosis under the age of 40, under the age of 50, a combination of premenopausal breast cancer and ovarian cancer. Three or more cancers on the same side of the family, meaning mother's or father's side of the family, at any age, or patients with triple negative breast cancer diagnosed under the age of 65, or patients with a second breast cancer later in life. However, last summer, two studies were done that compared groups of patients that had met the criteria versus patients who did not meet the criteria, and you know what? The positive test results were the same between the two groups. And so it has kind of put the issue of genetic testing a little bit on its heels. Currently, the American Society of Breast Surgeons is publishing that they believe you should consider genetic testing for any newly diagnosed breast cancer patient, which is not necessarily being generally accepted yet. But stay tuned. There will be more recommendations. The bottom line is the risk has to be assessed, and if there's a significant family history, we probably will do genetic testing.
And then the
screening should stem from that. So if you have a patient who has dense breasts, then the screening recommendations are basically the same, but there's a recommendation to have additional imaging. At our center, that would involve automated breast ultrasound, which sees through that density. The problem with breast density is it's sort of like looking for stars through the clouds. You see a white background on the mammogram, and abnormalities show up as white, so you can kind of lose it in the density, and ultrasound sees through that.
3D.
For patients who have a genetic mutation, they should be screened with both MRI and 3D mammograms starting at the age of 25. For patients who had received radiation to their chest, typically for Hodgkin's lymphoma, between the ages of 10 and 30, they should be screened just like a patient with a mutation. For a patient who doesn't have a mutation, but they have a calculated elevated risk of 20% or higher lifetime risk, and we typically use a calculator called the Tyer-Cuzick calculator, that they should have MRI starting at the age of 35 and 3D mammography starting at the age of 35. And then just to round it out, for patients with a history of cancer diagnosed under the age of 50 that either do or do not have breast density, they should have MRI added to their annual screening. And for patients diagnosed at any age with breast cancer with dense breasts, they should have MRI added to their mammogram.
So really a lot of this all comes all the way back around to age 25 to 30. Get this conversation going.
It needs to start with an assessment of risk.
All of this and where you need to go, where the genetic testing is. And I think a lot of it relates to, a couple of things. One, anxiety is a negative outcome. You know, you don't want women to have this way on their minds any more than it needs to. And the second thing is when some women have some of these markers or genetic issues, prophylactic mastectomy starts to enter the mind, and some people do it. So really, just get a super informed opinion as early as possible and rest on that.
Yes, and the whole thing needs to be based on risk.
For women who do get breast cancer, Thyra-M. Humphrey Center for Breast Health is the place to go for that particular cancer treatment. Tell us about, you have high survival rates these days, and then I want you to tell us about the accelerated recovery. So both
yes.
things. First, the high survival rate.
Well, high survival rate depending on stage at diagnosis. Again, that's why we need to be adherent to the screening protocols. The problem with waiting 4 years is the stage is not going to be the same as it would have been if that patient had annual mammograms. But patients that are diagnosed at stage one, for instance, have a better than 90% survival rate. So, and that goes down from there. Also, cost of care is based on stage at diagnosis, and the higher the stage, the more costly the care is. So, it speaks to both the individual and to the health system.
All right, so those are your survival rates. And then accelerated recovery. When a mastectomy happens, you're yes, taking sir. Care of women faster in some
yes.
ways.
Yes, to manage their perioperative pain, we have begun to do several things. We have an accelerated breast protocol for mastectomy, and that involves some perioperative medications that we give. But central to the protocol is something called a PEX-1 and PEX-2 block. We use a mixture of long-acting medicine called bupivacaine or liposomal bupivacaine that lasts about 3 days, and that's mixed with 0.5% bupivacaine, and the recipe is a little bit immaterial. But together, we're having patients that are waking up post-op with no pain, and then having very little pain at all in that first week of care, to the point that about 80% of them are coming back and saying that the only thing they use is Tylenol. I had a patient in the office yesterday, and she said she used nothing during the previous week, which is very remarkable. Probably one of the most transformational issues that I've come across in my practice in the past 20 years is that to be able to do that much surgery, including reconstruction, and have little or no pain afterwards is very remarkable. And it allows them to avoid opioid use, which speaks to the opioid crisis, but also speaks to avoiding the complications of opioids, including constipation and nausea and vomiting.
We have women that come here on this show and say, well, now I'm anxious to use an opioid anytime, whether I need it for a short-term pain or not.
Right.
You know, because of all of this. So this can really help out there. And again, that's a full conversation that they would have with you and the other folks at EVAN when this happens. As we're painting the belly pink, there's some after-hour mammograms coming up October 17th, 5 to 7 p.m.
Yes, sir.
Tell us about those.
Yes. We have extended hours to accommodate patients whose work schedules, family schedules, et cetera, may make it hard for them to get in. So we're trying to meet them halfway and just make it easier to get in.
All right. I'm going to give you an open mic, an additional comment. Anything to add to our interview today, please?
Well, I would just really like to go back to the screening issue. The screening is everything with breast cancer. The stage at diagnosis determines what the outcome is. It determines what the cost is. And we're not just talking cost to the health system. The cost to the individual patient is higher per stage of diagnosis, because all of us will absorb some of the cost of our care. But most importantly, it really is the increased survival by being diagnosed earlier. We are working. One of the reasons for doing the cooking men is that we've lost some of the supplemental funding that we get, for instance, from Susan B. Komen Foundation, and that directly ties to the confusion over screening mammography. When it became very confusing, they put out a letter saying they were no longer going to fund mammograms. They were going to put all of their resources into research because they didn't know whose protocol to follow. And that's what you get when you get that kind of confusion. So we're trying to replace the funds we used to get externally by having these donations come internally.
That's called taking your ball and going home.
It is.
Kind of. That's tough. All right. Well, honestly, please, on that note, support Cooking Men. Even though the event itself is sold out now, vote for the chefs. You pay a buck or two to vote for the chefs. I'll add that, and then you can do that. But you can get more information on the screenings, the health risks, the accelerated recovery with this pain block, and everything else that we've been talking about at evanhospital.com. evanhospital.com/cookingmen. Is the particular website for the Cook and Men voting if you're going to vote for one of the chefs. But do go to evanhospital.com for more information on all these. Thank you so much for your annual checkup, Dr. Turner. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Mark.